This episode is part of our road trip series and features the northwest coastal region of Liguria, home to Genoa and the Italian Riviera. For recipes referenced in this episode, please read our show notes, which include links to information about the region, recipes, and YouTube videos of cooking techniques. We also feature, at the end of the episode, a recent blog post by Vanessa about the book A Certain Hunger. You're listening to Sharing the Flavor, a show that connects you with flavor and how to create it. In this show, we connect you with recipes, cooking techniques, and show you a little bit of the science of cooking to help make you a successful cook so you can share flavor with your friends. I'm your host, Andy Gebbie. In this episode, we feature the northwest coastal region of Italy called Liguria. This area is famous for focaccia, pesto, and many forms of seafood, along with their own unique wine. So join us as we visit the Italian Riviera and Liguria. So speaking of picture taking, as we look at a picture here of the Cinque Terre, and as I was researching this with Portofino and all this, probably the most photographed place on Earth? Darn close to the most photographed place on Earth?
No, not even close, but...
Beautiful. It reminds me a little bit of the painted houses on the island of Burano, right near Venice, because they have all the houses painted in those colors too. They're just not tall, like built on the cliffs that they are in Portofino.
Yeah, when you look at Portofino, I even had like this was a restaurant that I found here called, was it Daristide? How would I pronounce that, Giovanni? Daristide?
Daristide, yes.
And this it's a restaurant in Manarola.
What does it mean?
A name.
Oh, it's just a name? Like somebody's last name? Oh, okay.
Or first name, though it's not very common, hence.
Okay.
But it's in Manarola, which is part of Cinque Terre. Super beautiful. Well, so we're here to kick it off. This episode is about Liguria. And Liguria is, I'll give us a little map here for reference. Liguria is in the northwestern region of Italy. Genoa is the capital city. It is ultra famous for having the Italian Riviera. Some of the most beautiful photography you can imagine along the Mediterranean. So,
also the birthplace of wasn't it Christopher Columbus?
Christopher Columbus, exactly. Yeah, Christopher Columbus, born in Genoa.
It depends slightly on who you ask. The latter one.
Oh, really?
Well, I'm asking me. So according to me, that's
not the
where
time.
I think probably there's controversy around where he was born.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They don't, there's a big movement against celebrating Christopher Columbus, Columbus Day here in the United States. And there's a lot of pushback from Italian Americans because of the fact that he was from Italy. So it's kind of interesting. Wasn't there an episode on The Sopranos about that? Now that I'm thinking about it? Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, sorry, Andy.
No. I literally had no idea. So if there is any extra tidbits on Christopher Columbus, we could put them in the show notes.
No.
You know how much of a trivia nerd I am.
There are historical arguments that maybe he wasn't born there at all. The Spaniards wanted to claim him for his own, actually. Some of them did, but.
Oh, Bob.
And then there are a whole bunch of evidence that effectively, even though he was the one that popularized it, probably there were several people that had gone to North America before Christopher Columbus, particularly the Swedes, not only. And a bit of
I don't think anyone anymore necessarily believes he's the one who discovered America. I think there's Amerigo Vespucci, there were the Norse, and then of course, don't forget the people who actually were there when all of these invaders came in, the indigenous tribes. So,
yes. Well, enough of Christopher Columbus. He's for another day. We need to talk about food here. So we're in Cinque Terre, and I'll give us a little bit of pretty stuff here to look at as we're talking about these beautiful coastal towns. Cinque Terre is five lands. It's the five towns. As I was researching this, Giovanni, I thought this was really cool. Is since they were separated and they were kind of, you know, they each had their own castles and kind of warding them off from Turkish invaders and things like that. There's actually different dialects in each city.
Yes.
And I didn't know that. That was really cool.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that either.
Yes.
Very cool.
So for our menu today, we're going to be talking about cuisine in Liguria. And Liguria is famous for a few things. And we've all made different things from Liguria here that we're going to be talking about today. So we're going to be talking about focaccia. We're going to be talking about pesto. We're going to be talking about polpettone di fagiolini. Is that right?
Yes.
And we also want to talk about, is it cioppino, as well as muscoli ripieni, which is mussels. And if we can get it all in with dessert, we want to talk about, I'm probably going to mispronounce this, Giovanni, is scacciatella wine. Is that right? Which is their sweet wine?
No, it's she.
Oh, sciatella?
No, SCI is she.
Sciacchetta?
Pretty much.
Okay. Cicchetto wine and biscotti or cookies for dessert. But let's start off with focaccia. So focaccia is huge in Liguria. As part of this, I made focaccia twice, actually. And I was reading about one of the most famous places that's made this is Marinetta, which started making this in 1946. And there are, it's funny because when I was watching videos on this, Giovanni, there's one lady who was interviewing a baker, and the baker was talking about how the recipe or how they make focaccia really depends upon the day, depends upon humidity, depends upon all kinds of things. So,
did you have any issues with the humidity there when you made it?
You know what? No, I thought I kept it under control fairly well, because I mean, even though it was humid here, we had the AC on. I actually used a technique that, where I was, it was all about the multiple rises that were needed for it. And specifically I've done this when I've been making sourdough as well. It's called, autolyse, which is like it's a rise that you do for hours to get things activated. And the other thing I thought was really neat about making focaccia is that you really don't need the dough an awful lot. You don't want to really disturb the dough, that you're kind of,
right.
You're kind of gently forming the dough. You're in what they call like a wet shaggy dough. So you're making wet dough, you're letting it rise for many hours, and then you're kneading it very gently, letting it rise again, letting it knead gently, very rise again. And then you're
kind of...
So it's
not the kind of bread you want to make when you're pissed off and you need to take your, anger out on something?
Probably not. It's a calm, caring kind of bread. You don't want to be violent with pesto, with focaccia.
I won't make it when I'm in a bad mood then.
The pesto is good to let go of your anger so you can make the
I was going to say, when we get there with the mortar and pestle, you can go to town on that with pesto. Yeah.
I have one, and that was great therapy. You beat the hell out of whatever's in it, and 10-20 minutes later, you're like, oh, I love the world again.
But the most delightful thing is when you're making focaccia is to me, it's like the process of the rise. Here, I'll get to where they're showing these, the dough actually resting here. And it's really neat when you see the, you let the dough rise for its first time and its second time. And you're, you know, the key thing for me was to making sure that I could control the temperature as it was rising. We don't have a warming tray, so I had to simulate it. But what you want at the end is this kind of rise where it gets a little bit bubbly, and the dough's still wet, and then you're kind of spreading it out against the pan and then doing the famous dimpling effect on there. So you're dimpling the dough, and then you're...
And that's where you just like take your fingers and you just like poke at it?
Yeah, you're just poking like crazy at it. So you're poking like crazy at the dough. And then from there, let's see where the guy's doing his poke thing right here. And then you spread it out along the tray, poke at it, and you're drizzling olive oil on top. And
you're,
I guess,
wait a minute, Andrew, you have to interrupt you. You're pouring olive oil. One of the problems
in
the
United States, you're not pressing it. Yes. That's a really good point about olive oil, because even when I was doing the rise, Giovanni, you're incorporating olive oil even early.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, and that's really important. So you're incorporating it with the dough in the rise. And then when you spread it out, you are layering the olive oil on top, right? You're not,
which is somewhat why it's better if you can to get a northern Italian olive oil. You don't want something that's going to be too heavy. Mm-hmm. And you sure as hell don't want anything that's not extra virgin. Do not even think it. And no, it cannot be replaced with it.
Why wouldn't you use extra virgin?
It's going to fuck up the flavor dramatically.
In what way?
You're going to have if you're attentive to it, you're going to have a bitterness involved. You're going to have a lack of flavor. It's not going to really taste too much because it's part of what you're eating. It's really actually,
I always thought that the extra virgin olive oils had more of a fruity flavor, but you're saying it would make it bitter?
No. You use extra virgin
only. Oh, you do use that? I thought you said
don't even think about using the chemically extracted crap, which is
what it has to be extra virgin.
And, the flavor of the oil will depend on the olives largely, and you want it preferably extracted cold, of course, with cold press. Mm-hmm. Anyway,
is Ligurian olive oil a little less spicy than other olive oils, Giovanni? That was one of the things I was going to ask.
More than less spicy, at least the ones, because it depends on the variety of olives they're using. It tends to be a little bit, yes, less heavy, more than spicy, less heavy. Mm-hmm. If you get some of the southern oils, they do tend to be particularly Calabria. Again, it depends on the grape variety you're using, on the olive variety you're using. They tend to be very flavorful, maybe too flavorful, and really, really olivey, rich, deep olivey. And you don't really want that for the focaccia. You want something which is lighter.
Yep. And when after you have done the dimpling effect, and you've poured the olive oil in, so we'll see, see how the olive oil is just gracing the top of it. And it's kind of, the reason you're dimpling it is you want the olive oil to go into the dimples itself. And then this is one of the things I was going to ask you, Giovanni, is it more traditional to have thyme on top of it than rosemary? I did mine with rosemary.
No, there's not something, at least when I was there, most of the time it's with nothing.
Oh, really? With nothing?
Because it's naked.
It's a bread. It's basically a bread. You eat it for breakfast as well. You can flavor anything however you want, but you don't. Most of the time, it's just plain, just focaccia.
Because when I was watching the video from Marinetta, they were even putting onions on it.
You can put anything you want on them. That's why it's a focaccia. It's like a pizza between a pizza and a bread. And
there was a place in Tarquinia. I can't remember where it was, or the name of it rather, where we had focaccia, and they put caramel. They had caramelized onions, and then they served basil, fresh basil, on top of it. It was so good.
Mm-hmm. I saw another video where a gentleman was doing onion, and he was kind of putting inside the dimples tomatoes and olives, which looked really
good. Classical,
really, really good.
That sounds amazing.
You can almost think of it like a pizza, and it's not like it's just the Genoa focaccia is kind of a lighter flavor than, because they also make it they make it all over Italy. But in Genoa, it's kind of an art form because it's a fluffy, light thing that has a slight crispiness on the outside, very, very, very slight, so you can feel with your teeth, and that's fluffy.
Yeah, that's the way mine turned out. Is you had this wonderful crust because of all of the olive oil, but the inside was light and airy.
Mm.
It was just delightful. And I just finished, so I had a mine rosemary and then, you know, the salt on top of it. But yeah, there's so many varieties of focaccia. It's silly. The other one I wanted to talk about, Giovanni, which literally blew my mind, was focaccia di Recco, which was where you have, here, I'm going to go here and show how these guys are making this, where it is, they're putting this on this really, they're making a very, very thin dough in the process. They're making a super thin dough. And then what they're doing is they're putting it on this enormous copper plate, but they're putting two sides to it. And in between them, they're putting a layer of cheese in between it. So it is almost like a form of pizza in the process. I'm going to move this forward so we can actually see him.
He looks like he's getting ready to spin the pizza dough.
Yes, yeah. It is. However, the reason why it is a focaccia dough, it's not a pizza dough, and you can tell it's all bunch of olive oil.
So what's the difference? Even though he's treating it like pizza, it's the dough that's focaccia, right?
This is focaccia, and it's the way that it gets stuffed. It is effectively, if it's well done, it's really good. I mean, it's really, really, really good.
Yeah.
Really good. It's really, really, like four reallys. That good, huh? That's pretty damn good.
And they did start making it in Recco. And I've had it in Recco. And effectively, it's, for some, there it's an art form. And they just do it really, really, really well.
Do they use a specific type of cheese, or is any kind of cheese?
I don't even know which kind of cheese they use there, because I'm pretty sure that it can vary from place to place. But I'm pretty sure, Andy, they use mozzarella, probably.
Actually, it was... Fontina, I have it in my notes here. They're using Crescenza.
Crescenza. Better still, yes. Fresh cheese.
Yeah. And it was really neat to see, Vanessa, is he's literally throwing, right, Crescenza down here on this. And then after it's all put together, so you
I like
have,
a man who throws cheese on his bread with abandon. That's a man after
agree
my own
with
heart.
That. Mm-hmm. That says man's man right there is throw your cheese down.
Hell yeah.
Right?
I would marry a man who could do that. I'd be like, yep.
And his accuracy was amazing too. By the way. He's like doot doot doot, and then they put the other layer on top, and then I'll show it coming out of the oven here. Oh, so when it's all done, when they pressed it all together, they kind of smash it together on top. So you have the dough on top. Yeah, this is the pre-baked look of it right here. So the pre-baked look, and they drizzle olive oil on top. And then coming out of the oven is just magic. Start rolling it here again.
That's almost kind of like pornographic.
But look at that right there.
It is. Yeah. I mean, it is. Even the flavor is very pornographic. It's that good.
Yeah.
I should have remembered and recognized it as Crescenza.
So it's a fresh cheese. What do we got? It's not like cream cheese. It's just a fresh cheese.
Yeah. It just looked. It looked like it was. It wasn't. It didn't look hard. It almost kind of looked creamy, you know, like almost like burrata, like, but it was just you just throwing it down. And when you look at it, it kind of looks, I can't even describe it. It's like, it's not even pizza bianca. It's better. It's just really incredible looking.
No, it's just the dough is different. Again, yeah, pizza's made it, it's a different issue for when we get to Naples. Because you have a stuffed pizza as well, and it's often fried. No, it's simply a marvel, because it's crunchy and it's soft and rich, and everything is amalgamated. And if it's made, and you can tell this is made extremely well, these two, and it's simply the best focaccia I think you can eat. It helps if you can go to Recco and eat it there, of course, but if not, you can try to make it at home.
Yeah. So to me,
this is sacrilegious, Andrew, but unfortunately for me, I'm not huge on focaccia. I get it, but I don't get it in the sense of it's big, but it's just focaccia.
Well, but I but
the Genovese,
you know,
love it. They love it. It's like it's part of life.
Well, it's part of life, and I even heard that like it's
like when you serve it, putting it into like paper or something like that's a really bad thing, right? For them to do that, they'll serve it and it's meant to be eaten immediately, like as you're walking with it. I don't know. For me, as I'm becoming more of a baker, you know, and learning about things, you know, like sourdough and such, to me, it was an incredibly fun experience learning how to make focaccia at home and having a true appreciation for how it works. So I enjoyed it a ton. It was great. And I'll put links in the show notes of, you know, the recipes I use, which are obviously Americanized versions of it, but it was still a lot of fun and huge appreciation for focaccia now.
Looks really good.
Yeah.
Helpful at the time is when you can go there, because then of course you have Greco's on is on the coast, and as much of the coast, the most lovely part of Liguria is when they have these high hills next to the sea, and therefore you get your pizza, you're getting that full air of the Mediterranean coming in, and if you go there in the evening as the lights fade, you get to see the lovely landscape and the city lights in the distance along the coast while you're eating your pizza from Greco.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine, like, as I look at this cafe,
like,
I mean, it's just, you really can't go wrong with this. Like, here, I'll show you a picture of this cafe and the view. Come on. You're in paradise,
that's
right?
That's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's absolute paradise. But if focaccia wasn't enough, really, what is so uniquely Liguria and Genoa is pesto. We were talking about pesto a little bit before, and to me, pesto is art and therapy. It is at the same time, because if
that's
like you
something
guys are saying,
you can make when you're mad and beat the hell out of the pine nuts and get work out all of your frustration. Yep.
Totally. So Giovanni, I made pesto too. I had a blast making pesto,
Did you use a mortar or did you use a machine?
Yes.
Okay.
No, mortar and pestle. And it was a blast. Good. And I did feel, I had absolutely no anger in me at all after I did that. I think I was like one mellow dude eating my pasta after that. Cause I got
other
all
question.
My aggression.
Don't get pissed
like
off.
The culinary version of like, you know, drinking a glass of wine or smoking a joint or something, you're afterward, you're just like, life is good.
We've talked about like risotto therapy. There is such a thing as pesto therapy too, I'm convinced, right? Is the art of making pesto.
I'm with you on that one.
Pasta's still the best in my opinion, because you just start and it's that lovely feeling of gently kneading the dough because you can actually work it for a little while. Best, you got to be kind of serious to get a good job with it because it takes a bit of effort.
It does. It takes some serious effort because you're, I mean.
Andrew, question. Ahead. Did you get European pine nuts or did you use the Chinese stuff?
Unfortunately, I could not get European pine nuts. Okay. So I had to use the stuff off the shelf. I would have loved to have gotten them. I did use the best EVO I could get, right? I was trying to buy it to, I didn't get Ligurian, but I got good EVO.
The most important thing of the pesto, more than all of that, is the basil. And the basil has to be. There are a whole bunch of different varieties of basil, and you certainly can't imitate the stuff you get in the valleys. The best pesto, they say, and that I had as well, is on the valleys inside. They're small. You have small leaves. It's very sweet. Mm-hmm. No African big leaf crap. Small leafed, and it's filled with flavor.
For me, it was, basil grown from my own garden.
I was going to ask you
about garlic. Is the garlic really important, Giovanni? Because, I'll summarize the technique.
To your own taste, to your personal taste.
To your own taste? Because I'll summarize the technique where you're starting by mashing the garlic, and salt, and you're getting a paste out of that, and then you're adding in the basil leaves, and you're mashing, and then adding in the pine nuts as well. And it's just this therapeutical thing, right, where you're just mashing it over time, and then after that, adding the olive oil and letting it form into this wonderful, luxurious sauce. But I was curious because I read a little bit about some people prefer like very specific kinds of garlic. If it has a very specific taste quality to it, certainly mashing the garlic gets a ridiculous sum of flavor out of it. Mm-hmm. Ridiculous sum.
I would recommend whatever garlic you use to probably remove the essence. Otherwise you're going to get overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably don't want to use fresh, wet garlic because it's going to be too mild. You probably do want to have some variety. I would probably use red by a small bit just to taste.
Well, to me, this with, and then as I was reading the recipe here for pasta with it, this is pasta alla Genovese. I had a question for you on this, Giovanni. I didn't realize that they were making this with, you know, I've seen pesto with gnocchi, which seen a lot of that. But this had pesto combined with pasta and potatoes and beans.
Classically, you put potatoes and green beans, string beans, sorry, into the dish, into the pot you're going to make the pasta in. And that is a classic, particularly Genova way, you eat pesto with that.
The potato breaks down and it kind of helps thicken and amalgamate the sauce as well. I had that when I was in Italy, and it really makes a difference to the texture.
It makes perfect sense. I just never saw it that way before.
If you're not going to use spaghetti, and even if you want to, but trofie, which are those little things you wrap around, they're small noodles. Wrap around a small thingy then I'm not so sure if you want to use necessarily the potato and the green bean, string bean. And the other thing is to make with testaroli, which is the oldest pasta, which is basically a slightly thicker dough. And they just with big strips or big pieces, as it were, big like diamond-shaped pieces. And that works pretty well too. If you're going to use spaghetti or linguine, like I think this is linguine here, yeah. I would definitely use good, if you can find them, string beans and a little bit of potato.
Mm-hmm. And I guess they were saying that you're cooking the string beans with the pasta, and there's about 4 minutes left in the cooking cycle.
Depends on how you like. I like them well cooked, personally. String beans.
Yeah, this to me, I definitely want to try. My pasto did not have this, but I want to make another run at it just to try the taste of this with the potatoes and the green beans and the pasta all together.
The pesto is a different issue. That's just, you can eat it with however you want. Some people go nuts on it. You can eat it with focaccia. That's fine. Mm-hmm. Pizza. Use it as a side dish for meats if you want to. Not really nice, but you can. Mix it with a mozzarella roll where you take a mozzarella and you wrap it up, and inside the thing is you put like flavorings or meats. Pesto would work fine, et cetera, et cetera. This is the classic Ligurian pesto. There are other pestos in Italy, particularly in Sicily, which aren't the same. Pesto comes from the action of hitting and smashing something, which is in the Genovese dialect. But the pestare and the pesto, you can actually make it with anything you want. And the other famous one is probably from Syracuse in Sicily, where they use almonds.
And that's called pesto trapanese, the one that's
or trapano.
From the south, they use the almonds instead of pine nuts.
Which is really good, by the way. Mm-hmm. The reason why I didn't make it out of this, because yes, for whatever reason, also because I'm not used to it. You can go out to a forest and get your own pine nuts. I'm not kidding. You just look for pine cones that aren't rotten, and then you'll find pine nuts, but it's expensive to harvest, and it's become really expensive. And if you don't get the Chinese one, man, that's supposed to be a cheap dish.
I'll send you some pine nuts from New Mexico, Andy. We have pine trees that grow all over the place, and in fact, that's what we used to do when we were little girls. My sister and I would go with our grandparents to their property in the mountains, and we would just go pick pignon, but we call them pignon, but like the Italian word pignoli. Same thing. I'll send you a bag. You don't have to. And they're grown here in New Mexico, so they're
cool.
I will even pick them with my bare hands just for you, my friend.
That's a really awesome
story.
I'll
get my hands dirty.
And that's cool.
I would love that. That's cool.
And that's really cool because, unfortunately, how did you get it to get one bag of decent pinoli? Effectively, it's hard to find it now for less than, say, 5 or 6 euros, which would be for pasta for 4 abundantly. So you're already departing. Instead of it being a cheap dish, it's already now kind of becoming kind of an expensive dish because or you buy the Chinese stuff, but they have a different flavor, and it's not the same.
You do have a different flavor, yeah. Well, it's, I mean, it's true.
I'm surprised that pine nuts aren't grown more frequently in some of the drier mountainous areas of Italy, because there are some regions that are very similar in their weather and their temperament to New Mexico. It seems like that wouldn't be.
It's not they're grown. It's expensive to harvest. Because you go out and you do it by foot and you pick it up. But imagine you have to pay for it and then pay for the transportation.
Oh, Andy, I'm going to charge you for the pinon. Don't worry.
That's what I figured. I figured this is $50 straight ahead.
Right. Andy's like, oh, yeah, I figured I wasn't getting it for free. You know, that makes sense. And harvesting it is challenging. You know, you have to, it's kind of painstaking work. So that makes sense.
And kind of like saffron, their flowers go everywhere. But now it's become gold. It's become, they call it yellow gold. Yellow gold, they call it in Abruzzo.
If you're buying fresh pine nuts, it's an expensive dish to make. It's worth it, but it's an expensive dish.
It was a very cheap dish, Andy. I mean, it's pesto. It's some leaves of herbs, some nuts, which everyone got. Like she explained, you can go out, people used to go out and get it yourself, and you mash it together with garlic and olive oil, which everybody had. And you eat it, because in Italy, at least, potato and green bean is a classic dish all over the peninsula. Everywhere, it's a classic dish. A combination, I should say. And so it's a cheap dish, really full of flavor, uplifting, great in the winter, better in the summer. And unfortunately, now it's become somebody in Italy now, unfortunately, it's become very frequent to buy the stuff that's been already, comes in a can. And that's unfortunate, because it doesn't taste as good.
It's not nearly as good. I mean, the process of mashing it in the mortar and pestle and using the fresh, you know, mashing the garlic, using the fresh basil. I mean, just the pure aroma that's coming off that is just like mesmerizing when you're doing it. It's funny because my hands, like you're smelling your hands afterwards, you're like, wow, that is intense. That's what you're doing, but it's wonderful.
And then maybe it's
like a real collaboration between the food and the cook, I think.
I would agree.
Mm-hmm. We can have an inverse graph to see the road rage tied to the lack of making pesto at home. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
There you go. I'm telling you, we just discovered two forms of therapy. We have risotto therapy with wine.
Perhaps we should try and start a campaign, Andy, here in the United States to try and, you know, keep people's anger to a low simmer by encouraging pesto making on weekends.
Before you get on the road, make pesto, please. Keep the road safe for all of us.
Leave your gun at home and make pesto first.
Before going to public places, make pesto, please. We'll all be safer as a result.
I do want to try making it.
I think we could do something with that.
I do want to try making it using not. I'm going to try making it using a machine though, because I want to see how it turns out using my little hand crank, because it should work. The idea, of course, to do that is to first to be gentle on it. More importantly, is to stay away from temperature. You don't want heat, obviously. And that hand crank one is cool. Like one of those hand crank things where you just go like this and it cuts everything up for you. If you don't have one, buy it. It's so cool. They work really well.
That's a good little arm workout too.
It's great.
I'll tell you about my mashing potatoes when we get to my recipe. But
and that's the perfect segue, Vanessa, to your work of art that you created.
Oh, that's right.
With
the classic dish.
Polcettone di fagiolini e patate. And I put porcini mushrooms in mine as well. So it was delicious.
That was incredible.
It really was. Yeah.
She got a raise.
Yeah, I did. Yep. As a matter of fact.
Yep.
So let's describe it for the audience. So it's potatoes, green beans, classic combination, right?
It's like a loaf essentially. I mean, you can't call it a meat loaf because there's no meat in it, but it's a loaf. It's made in the basically the same fashion that you would make a meatloaf. You use egg to bind it, and then you put like breadcrumbs in your loaf pan, but. Basically, what I did is I boiled four potatoes. I could probably have used three. And I have what's called a potato ricer. So you don't even have to peel your potatoes. You just cut them in half and you boil them in salted water until they, you know, you can pierce them with a fork. And then this potato ricer is this metal device. It almost looks like a lemon juicer. And you put the potato into the ricer and you squeeze it. And it basically keeps the peel inside, but all the cooked potato comes out, and then you don't even have to mash it. You just stir it with a fork. It's like the easiest thing in the world. But it's an arm workout because you're just like, they're squeezing, you know? And so I kind of, you know, that was therapy for me. I was, you know, I was in a really good mood after I, you know, squeezed the hell out of 8 potatoes. I was like, calm and happy again.
I was going to say, you're at peace with yourself. I mean, to me, this just looks decadent, right?
Yeah.
Is if you're having this and the layer of flavors that you're having mm-hmm. with the potatoes and the green beans. And I was looking for the, let's see here. So you have, oh, it's this. Did you put marjoram in yours too? Marjoram and the.
Yeah, I have marjoram and oregano growing in my garden. So I use both of them.
Nice.
Mm-hmm. So fresh marjoram. I probably put more than this recipe calls for. This recipe, it's on the website Memoria de Angelina. And it seemed pretty tame in terms of using fresh herbs. I like a lot of flavor, so I used about 4 or 5 big handfuls of marjoram and oregano, and I really liked it. And then what I did is I sauteed the green beans in a little bit of olive oil and butter with shallot and garlic just to give it some extra flavor. And then so basically what you do is when your green beans are cooked, you add them to a bowl with the cooked potato, the mashed potato, make sure the potato is cool. And then I put in my 3 eggs and salt, pepper to taste. And it does need a lot of seasoning, I will warn you. So just make sure you do season it well, because there's so much potato. And this recipe called for Parmigiano Reggiano. So I put in quite a bit. And then I had the porcini mushrooms that I had left from another blog post. So I put in the reconstituted porcini mushrooms. That gave it a really good flavor, I thought. And then you mix it up, and then you line a loaf pan with a little bit of butter, oil, whatever, and then some breadcrumbs. And then you bake it for, I don't know, 45 minutes. You let it cool off, and then you invert it so that you have like a square loaf. And I'll send pictures, and I'll put them on social media as well. And it basically looks just almost exactly like that.
Wow. When you say you invert it, what do you, I didn't follow
like,
that part.
Oh, so you know how when you take your, like when you're making meatloaf and you take it out of the pan, you just generally serve it, like you take it out and then you just cut it. In this case, I flipped the pan over once the polpettone was cool. So basically the bottom of it was now on the top. Does that make sense?
Got it. Yep. Okay. That makes sense.
And then that's cool. How we served it. And it was really good.
It looks sensational.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a funny story to tell you about the porcini mushrooms. I'll tell it at the end because it involves the book that I just did for my my latest blog post. There are two pivotal characters in the book. One is named Andrew and one is named Giovanni. And I'm not kidding. So cool. I'll tell you all about it at the end. Yeah.
Awesome.
And one interesting scene involves porcini mushrooms. So, yes.
That's
we have that to look forward to at the end.
Yes.
Cool.
But that was my polpettini de fagiolini e patate con porcini.
I bet. And then I bet this was very filling too, though. This was, this seems like this is very much
carb overload.
Stick to the ribs. You're very carbed up and very happy.
I was kind of surprised that it was a specialty of Liguria just because it is such a substantial dish. It's something that to me that would have fit in, you know, Valdosta or even in Piemonte because it's just such like a substantive dish.
Actually more so. Andy was in Italy, but actually in Abruzzo, they don't use it much. But when you go farther south in Italy, the use of potatoes are like to make a cake, basically, like that, is actually really, really common. It's used quite a bit. And I personally like it a whole bunch, using potatoes as the base of my dish. And particularly in Campania, they use a lot, and they get really intricate, too. And you can make marvelous things out of it.
Yeah.
What potatoes did you use?
You can see that it would be a good base for many different other.
And that's what they load with everything. Yeah. And what kind of potatoes did you use?
Russet potatoes.
Cool.
That's the best kind of potatoes to use for mashed potatoes, in my opinion.
They're
not as sticky.
Those?
If you use like the smaller. Newer potatoes, like the small red potatoes,
that's not adapted
they get
for
very
that.
Sticky in their texture. Mm-hmm. If you've ever made mashed potatoes with them, I don't like them at all. They don't,
depends
and they're not fluffy. They're kind of like, huh?
Depends on how much starch the kind you have. Like red, particularly, you can make almost all the time, but the best are good russets, and particularly if they're pretty, and you can tell if you, once you get used to it, you can tell when they're good looking and, or not. And they do make the best mash. I agree. Better than red. Or maybe mixing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would agree.
Not in red.
But and then the green beans I just got at my local farmer's market along with the garlic.
Mm. So. Fresh garlic and fresh green beans.
Yeah.
Yummy.
And you know they're organic. You don't have to worry that any pesticides or anything were sprayed on them, because the guy that I get all my vegetables from is an organic farmer. So he's trying to talk me into growing my own vegetables, but, you know, I'd have to get my hands dirty, and we all know how much and I don't
we're
like
trying.
To
we're trying.
I'm a princess,
we're trying.
So.
See, we're getting you there, right?
Hey, I grew flowers. I think, you know, that's progress.
That's already there. Plus, hey, you can make oil. You can eat the seeds.
Yeah.
Sunflowers.
Mm-hmm.
There you got it. So, Giovanni,
the
next topic we want to get to here is seafood, right? So Liguria is famous for seafood. And you surprised me on this one when you brought up, was it Chupin?
Well, I have to admit, I did not know, because it's not called Chupin in other places in Italy. But Chupin is just fish stew, basically. It's unclear if it derives from to chop, basically, because you just remember fishing boats didn't have refrigeration until the beginning of the night, well into the 1900s. So if you're there, what are you going to do? You're going to take the less marketable, smaller fishes that you've caught and make a stew out of it on the boat. And whatever combination you have, then some tomato, then some wine, maybe some bread that you brought from home, some olive oil. So every place has their own form of bouillabaisse along the Mediterranean, I'm assuming. Certainly all of Italy, each place has its own dishes and slight variations.
And you add tomatoes to it, correct?
Depending on where you are, usually, but depending on where you are. I'd like them because they fit very well. And then the herbs you have are there, and then the sofrito you have, it depends on what you have with you. And you just make it a lovely dish. And it is, for me, it's one of my favorite foods. I didn't know that you call it chupin in Liguria, in Genoa. And I thought chupino was just a word from Italian immigrants in San Francisco. But no, it's actually, they were from Liguria. And they started making it there probably around 1850, second half of the 1800s. And it became chupino.
I never knew that. It's fantastic. I mean, I've had it, you know, being in San Francisco, but I never made the connection to Genoa. It makes all the sense in the world.
Neither did I, because I didn't know, because we don't call it that, at least. And just the fish stew, they're very simple to make. Actually, they're not very simple to make, because you have to, the timing is relatively important as to when you put in each fish.
Yeah.
And there are a bazillion different varieties.
Fish,
yeah,
and
you always put like the shrimp
as
the last. You just shrimp is always the last. Moreover, if you want to make it fancy, then of course you will separate the meat from the shells and the bones, some of the bones, to make a fumé or something. If you want to make it a bit more interesting, but that's not what fishermen did. They just chopped the fish immediately caught
whatever was left at the end of the day that they couldn't sell.
Yeah,
it was a good way to get rid of it.
Particularly smaller fishes, which, you know, you don't get, there's not a big market. There wasn't a big market for. And the two ways of making it is either fish stew, which I love personally, or frying them, which I love. And more than the more
so
fancy
speak,
ways of
speaking
of
frying
them.
Fish, as I was doing reading and research, it was anchovies, like very, very much a staple of Cinque Terre in Genoa. Am I wrong about that?
Yes, but different. And anchovies in the south, it's... You catch them in the main certain way. In Piemonte and in Liguria, they're often salted.
Mm.
So actually, for the United States, well, I'm sorry. In the U.S., when we say anchovies, we think of the stuff in a can. My apologies.
Right.
Yes, it is. But in the South, it's not, in the sense that you make anchovies fresh. And they're really good fresh. And you make them a bazillion different ways. But it's not a huge part of the Ligurian that I know of the Ligurian foods, where instead they make other
anything
things.
You can get fresh is always going to be better, though. I mean,
pretty much.
Sardines, I mean, canned sardines and fresh sardines, they're like night and day. So
exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And the other fish dish, and I know you made this, Giovanni, you didn't think it was all that special, but I want to try making it, is the stuffed mussels. This came from, and I'll put the recipe in the show notes. This came from La Cucina Italiana, which is a nonna in Cinque Terre is making stuffed mussels.
Yeah, it's not that I don't think it's not that I don't think it's good or bad any place. It's that it's a good amount of work because you'd have to get the mussels, clean them very well, because you have to clean them very well. And then you stuff them. It's a way, of course, of without a lot of protein, because you usually use bread and breadcrumbs, particularly of making things, you know, richer and longer. And they're usually stuffed with you can see, and then you use tomato. But yeah, I prefer clams by and large as they are. Go ahead. Didn't mean to interrupt. Go on.
No, I was just going to say, and then to me, it's, I love the idea.
That's called alla spezzina, right? And,
pardon me?
Excuse me.
Mussels alla spezzina. Is that correct? That they're called, what they're called?
That I don't know.
Giovanni?
I don't know either. I don't know what, forgive me, I do not understand the word. What did you say?
Are they called alla spezzina? Because I seem to remember reading something about stuffed mussels from the Ligurian area, and they were called alla spezzina, but I don't remember.
From
Spezz, if that's true,
because
or
that's
not.
It's a city, so it's alla spezzina, could be, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
That makes sense.
Oh, okay. Good. I'm not crazy. I mean, I am, but... In this case, no.
Well, what I was going to say is I love mussels in red sauce, and this is
spezzina.
Right up my alley.
Spezzina.
I was saying it wrong. Alla spezzina. Okay, cool.
It's not
Thanks,
referring
Giovanni.
To this, actually.
So yeah, it's to me, it's you
I
know
think
the
you
mussels.
Should do it, Andy.
I'm gonna try it. I know it's gonna be a big labor to do it, but I want to try it anyway. Because I love mussels and red sauce. So I will, I'll make this if I do, I'll put it up on social media, et cetera.
Okay.
Can you guys get good fresh mussels there? Andy, can you get good fresh mussels in Cleveland?
Seasonally, right. I have to like work with my fishmonger. They bring in stuff. It's not going to be the same as the fresh mussels you're getting on the coast, right? Where they have immediate access to it. For us, it has to all be brought in. They bring them in daily or several times a week, so you have to time it right to when you're going to go for mussels.
Okay, make sure of course you don't eat the stuff that's not good. Okay, that
totally no,
unless you want to have either a good trip, a good healthy membership, 24-hour membership to the bathroom. And
I don't need to be doing that. So I'm going to take the time and prepare.
You'll have the spezzina coming in and the spezzina coming out. Or no, the reason I want you to be worried
You're
is because
so gross, Giovanni. Yeah,
because you have.
We're talking about food. Don't be talking about that.
I was gonna say, don't mess up my
Come
appetite,
on.
Dude. We don't need to be talking about the
other
room
bodily
in the house.
Functions.
Yeah.
Okay, then we shall not talk about those bodily functions. Just make sure you don't eat stuff that's gone sour in that regard.
Yes, agreed.
It's
well,
more,
isn't the trick mussels? You steam them, you get your mussels and you throw away the ones that are open, and then you cook them or you steam them however you want, and then you throw away the ones that are still closed when you're done cooking them.
Right.
That's always what I've heard, and that's rule has worked very well for me. It saved me, I'm sure, many trips to the bathroom.
Yeah, but that's why this is a bit more interesting, because it's going to be slightly less visible to see which is which. You'll throw away the first batch, but you won't know the second batch as much because you have to stuff them up. And then...
Well, what's life without a little risk, huh? This is it, Andy.
It's probably not up there with blowfish or things like that, but I need to be careful when I'm making
You have to
this.
Be adventurous in life. Come on. Gotta channel your inner Anthony Bourdain there, okay?
I should know.
By and large, exactly. Particularly in the winter months, I eat mussels and on average of at least once a month, maybe twice a month. At least,
and look, you're still
it's
alive.
Cheap. It's
so there you
cheap.
Go.
They're delicious.
They're absolutely
medium
delicious.
Size. You don't want them too large nor too small. You want the medium size.
That's everything in life.
That's right.
I don't know. Size matters.
I'm not going to argue with you on that one.
but go for it. Just to make sure you, the problem for me is is cleaning the mussels. Cleaning the mussels is can be kind of longish to clean them well. And if you're going to be doing stuff,
it is the cleaning process is laborious.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
But if you're getting them from a fishmonger, they're going to get they're going to do that for you already, right?
Precisely. You know, get to know your fishmonger.
That's why
you'll be treated well.
One of the benefits of living in capitalist society, and I know this is going to send Giovanni on a tangent, is you can pay people to do these things.
To do that.
No,
exactly.
No, that's perfectly fine. But then it becomes a much more expensive dish. Mussels are cheap as heck.
Well, I don't mind paying the extra money to my fishmonger to have him help me out. Let's put it that way.
Time versus money.
Yes.
There you go.
Could be.
So we're getting into the dessert round here, and one of the things I didn't know about Cinque Terre was the vineyards, the terraced vineyards, which looks super cool. I didn't know about that, like how kind of like when I think about like the terrace of like rice, you know the rice towers and things like that, the vineyards, and there was even I'll put a link to the video on here. There was actually
you've been to Switzerland.
The Valais, yes, but it was just the sheer rockiness, you know, going around the coastline of Liguria was pretty impressive to see the vineyards there.
It's spectacular because you're going down to the ocean itself, and therefore you have the unlimited horizon. But you have no choice. You have to terrace things, otherwise you can't make the wine. You can't do it. They had to, and they've been doing that for a very long time.
Well, and there was even like a video of like they had essentially like a monorail or not a monorail, but it's kind of like a trolley that would take you up the hillsides to the vineyards to go work in them, which is really cool.
I think you found what you're going to do when you retire, Andy. You're going to grow wine in Cinque Terre along those terraces and go harvest it.
I have no problem with that idea.
I know, right?
I'll take the train into Genoa when I need to be in the big city, but I'll be pretty cool hanging out in Cinque Terre. So, but I guess the big thing in Cinque Terre is white wine. Is it Chaquetra?
Chaquetra.
Chaquetra. Chaquetra wine. And I guess this is a big thing post-meal, Giovanni, is to be drinking this wine from Liguria along with having biscotti. I also looked up something called canestrelli.
Canestrelli, which are a kind of cooking that are...
Those are very pretty.
Mm-hmm. Look like little daisies.
Yeah. And I'm assuming they're lemon flavored?
Chaquetra.
Yes.
Chaquetra I've never had. Minchia.
Limone. So yes, there is lemon in this.
I may have to try and make those.
Basically, it's like ice wine. Chaquetra.
Oh, is it like ice wine? Really?
Chaquetra. That's cool. Looking at the bottles.
Well, the chaquetra.
It definitely, I mean, it was a post-meal, you know, kind of like a cognac or a port or whatever like that. So it makes sense if it was ice wine, like on our one episode, we're talking about ice wine.
It's not ice wine, but it's, of course, because you want a high sugar content. You get it after they've become the wilt. It's harvested in November, basically halfway through the month, after other things have been, of course, harvested.
Neat.
Where are you? I'm lost. Back. There you go. I've never had it, I'm afraid, or I might have had it and don't recall, also because I tend to drink sweet wines from the south more often.
We'll run out and buy a bottle right now, too, and then let us know.
No way. Stuff is like €60 per like a half liter.
it's serious.
You got the raise. You go ahead and do that with the porcini, and next time it'll be with tartufo, potatoes and tartufo.
Oh, my God. That porcini wasn't even that expensive. They were like a bag of dried porcini for like $11.
So this is at the part of the show where we need to get to the porcini story.
Oh, yes. Okay. So my most recent blog post, I blogged a book called A Certain Hunger. It's one of the funniest books I've ever read in years and years. It's hilariously funny. It's a satire of the food the foodie industry now, like all these, you know, these websites and food blogging and such. Like, anyway, the main character, her name is Dorothy, and she's a food writer in the 80s and, you know, through the 90s and into the 2000s. And she's telling the story from prison because she has been convicted of murder. Basically, what she did is she murdered her lovers and ate them. She's cool. A cannibal. It's hilarious. It is so funny. Just the satire of the food industry it's like I was crying laughing. Anyway, so her first murderer is her lover, Andrew. And no, I'm lying. Her first one is her lover, Giovanni. So she kills Giovanni and harvests his liver because she wants to make fegatini al cingale. But instead of the cingale, it's fegatini di Giovanni.
Perfect.
And it's so funny. Her second one was Andrew. So she wanted a rump roast a la Andrew. And you can just figure that one out on your own. Yes.
There you go.
So needless to say, I thought of both of you when I was reading that book. I was like, yeah, this is great.
I can imagine the scene, except we'll have a guy singing instead of a woman singing the tune, which is usually a woman singing the tune, Killing Me Softly.
Yeah.
Well done, Giovanni. Well done.
But with his liver instead of his song at this point.
That's the first thing that comes to mind.
In Andrew's case, the rump, Killing Me Softly with his rump. So anyway, it's really good. And then her last kill is her lover Marco, who she's had this long 30-year affair with in Rome. And he's actually a kosher Jewish butcher. So I'm sure you can she's learned a lot from him. So I'm sure you can understand It was a really good book, needless to say, and really excellent food references. And in fact, so
Andy,
the meal.
What's the name of the book again? Because I will put it in the show.
Okay, A Certain Hunger.
We'll put a link.
In. Chelsea G. Summers is the author.
Andy,
there's a scene when she's trying to butter up Andrew. Not literally at this point, but so she cooks him a meal of sausages braised with fennel and risotto with porcini and peas. So, which is what I made.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Could you put a link when you put the notes up to her, directly to her blog post?
Absolutely.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Is the blog post already live?
Yeah, it's the most recent one. I did it last week.
Which I have not seen
do
yet because I don't,
thank you.
Don't have updates anymore
it's,
of that thing.
It's hilarious. It's a hilarious book.
I love it. You got to read it. In some respects, it almost reminds me, what was the... There was a movie, Giovanni. There was a French movie.
A whole bunch of them.
The Cook, the Thief, His Wife and Her Lover?
No.
Not that one.
That was the British one. No.
Delicatessen.
Delicatessen.
Remember the movie Delicatessen?
Where you have the saw at the end of it, the singing saw.
It was hilarious.
I hadn't thought about that movie in a long time, but that was a good one. But The Cook, the Thief, His Wife and Her Lover has a really interesting cannibal scene in there as well.
Yes.
So.
But that's serious stuff. That's a great movie. That's kind of serious stuff.
Helen Mirren. Who's my idol? So, yeah.
Same. You cannot go wrong with Helen Mirren.
I know, right?
Well, wrapping it up with a little cannibalism is all good. So this was a fun episode. This way we covered a lot of ground here.
I'm singing that song "Man Eater" by Hall & Oates.
Oh, cool!
I literally have
Watch
"Killing Me Softly." I literally have "Killing Me Softly" going through my head right now, literally. So.
It does give one some ideas. I will say that book.
It does.
And there's a section in there where she goes truffle hunting. And you would have particularly appreciated it, Giovanni, because she was as much of a food snob as you are. And so she actually went for truffle hunting with Giovanni. So.
Food snob.
That's a compliment. You should be a food snob. It means you have high standards.
I'm still thinking of what I would, of how I would cook me if I could cook me, and the different parts of me.
If you need any ideas, let me know.
That would be cool. Now that would be a wonderful tangent. We could actually have a spin-off story of a dude who knows he's going to die, so he ends up spending 2 months eating exactly what you're supposed to eat to flavor things a certain way. Then he kills himself.
Oh, yeah.
In the freezer, and then he said that it leaves letters, my love. here is my liver, mm-hmm. in order to then have different instructions on piece
my
by
heart
piece.
Is here, please cook it in such a way. Well, in the
and you
in
say
the
romance
book,
isn't dead, can you imagine?
I know, right? Well, in the book, this character Giovanni is a vegan, and so she talks about how she has to really doctor up his liver to make the fagottini because it's just totally.
It is certainly that. Please don't.
I was
that's
laughing so
worse
hard.
Than this than what I mentioned before regarding mussels. Forgive me for anybody who's vegan out there,
vegan?
But there is an exaggeration, and in case you're doing it for the marvelous. Willful reasons, which are cool. Nevertheless, you know, even plants cry. So don't be moral about it. Don't be vegan. Just eat less meat, but for heaven's sakes, have some fun.
Well, you've heard the old joke, right? Like, how do you know someone's a vegan? They'll tell you over and over and over again.
Oh, good grief. Yes, I do have a couple that I've known in the past.
Well, you two, this has been a lot of fun. Great episode. Thank you very much.
I know. I feel like some fagottini now. I might have to go make some.
Prosciutto. All now, right. That would be cool.
Fagottini al Giovanni.
That's the first one.